Welcome back. This is the last session in a long day of building Windows Store applications for iOS. And for the next half an hour or so, we're going to talk about submitting to the store. The most important part of, you know, writing your Windows Store application, making some money. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go too deep into giving you all the economics and the marketing of the store, because I can get excited and carry for 40 minutes easily just telling you about the benefits of the store. But I do want to give you a context of what Microsoft thinks about the store and kind of where we're at with regards to the store. So the first thing is, for us, obviously, the Windows Store is a huge, you know, change, which started with Windows 8. We want all developers to start making money, and we designed this store for, you know, several different good business reasons for you. The first one is we designed it for discovery. We want to us at Windows, we've always had a great ecosystem. We always had a lot of, you know, great apps, but we knew we needed a store that was designed for discovery so that people could come to our store and discover your app and install it. Windows has billions of users. If you add up XP, Vista, and Windows 7, and Windows 8, there's, you know, a lot of users out there. And all we need to do is make this discoverable, make your application discoverable for you to make a lot of money as those users start ramping up onto Windows 8 and 8.1. We have the, you know, their store will have that exact same reach than everything else Windows does. So the store is the one application that you're guaranteed that will be on every Windows install. So we're looking at, you know, 250 countries or now or so, 230 markets or so. We have over 100 languages. We have very, very large distribution with regards to a store. And it's something that came with Windows, so that's not something we designed for. But with regards to developer, we definitely designed to have a really great, a very flexible business model. And what that means is you're going to hear me talk about different business models. We have free apps like everybody else. Then we have kind of a paid app, something where you come, you pay for the app, and, you know, you buy it, and that's it. You install it, and from there on, you get free updates and everything else. We have in-app purchase, which is, again, pretty standard with regards to all the platforms. But we also have trials, which is a huge differentiator with regards to iOS. So in our platform, we have trials. A user can come in and do a trial.
And that's something that we would love to have in iOS App Store, but...
Yeah, for the last, I think, since iOS, definitely iOS 6, I kind of expected it, and I was really, really surprised when I saw iOS 7 and I did inside trials.
Right, because Windows Store, you get both feature-limited trials and also time-based trials, too.
Yep, yeah, so we have feature-limited and time-based, and you don't, for example, for time-based, you don't have to write any code at all. We just handle the operating system. You just declare on the store, and the operating system handles everything for you. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely great. And what that also allows us to do, since we're talking about that, it allows Windows applications, our pricing model is different. We have, very much like Apple, we have a tiered pricing model where Apple begins at 99 cents, and then it goes to $1.99, $2.99, and eventually all the way to $9.99, I think. And on our side, we started $149. So we thought, hey, you know, if people can try your app, because everybody complains about this whole 99-cent problem that we have, right, that developers are not making what's probably the right amounts just because everybody has to compete at the 99-cent level.
Race to the bottom.
Right, it's a race to the bottom. So with us, what we said is, look, let's let people try it. There's a lot of advantages to trials. One of them is, if you try it, you can decide if it's worth the $249 or the, you know, $299 or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
That you think your app is worth. So on that side, that's great. The other thing that trials allows us to do is Windows runs in a myriad of devices, mm-hmm. right? So we have hardware today that was probably made 2 years ago for Windows 7, and there's, you know, Windows 7 has 700 or 800 million users out there.
Right.
So if those users decide to upgrade, we need to make sure that your application runs well, and for that, you can give them the ability to try it. Right, if they have a kind of a two-year-old GPU, they might want to try it before they run this really great game, before they pay for this really great game that you have.
Right.
So trials allows you to make more money. We've seen day in and day out from both Windows Phone and Windows Research now that if you offer trials, you end up making more money. A lot of people think, well, if I do a trial, I'm not going to make my money. No, people will actually pay for your app. We see high conversion rate. Just make sure you time it right. Don't write a game that you can finish in a day and then give them a 7-day trial. But if you time it right, then you'll definitely can make a lot of money. And continuing on that with flexible business models, the other thing that we do is we allow you to monetize using third-party APIs or third-party, you could write your own monetization when it comes to our platform. So for example, if you want to buy something from eBay and you want to pay them with PayPal since they own it, great. And when you buy something from eBay, if eBay writes their app and they have their own monetization or their own kind of a in-app purchase with their own third-party APIs, they get 100% of that revenue, right? So that's a big advantage. Like, for example, you hear often about the whole Amazon, Wall Street Journal, all these companies that continue to fight with Apple over subscription revenue and all these things. Well, in our world, first of all those applications are already on Windows, of course, and they're getting 100% of that. Right, so the Telegraph, you know, which is newspaper, or Wall Street Journal, all of these digital publishers, they can come in, use their third party, you know, use their own in a purchase, and actually get 100% of that money, or get 100% of that minus whatever the commission. We do the same for ad networks, right? So Microsoft does have PubCenter. We give you an ad control if you want to use ours, but if you want to use a third party one, great, we will be okay, and we'll let you make your money. So our business models are more flexible with regards to that. Another thing that we designed for was around the economics. The one thing that we designed for was developers making more money. We know we're late to this party. We know we have to attract the developers. The reason we're doing this iOS training is because we know there's really great iOS apps that would be awesome to have, right? So we want developers to come to our platform. And what we do there is, our revenue share is 80% after you made your first $25,000. So you'll submit your app tomorrow, you will make $25,000 on the first day, and from there on, you're making 10% more, right? If you think about applications that make, you know, $10 million, that's a lot of money. That's over $900 or around $900,000 extra, right? For just porting your app and being there. So it's a really great thing. These 80% or these 25K is actually with regards to paid, in-app purchase, everything. So it's not like, oh, if your business model, if your monetization is in-app purchase, you have to get, you know, 25,000 people or 20 or 17,000 people to pay $1.49. You just, you know, you make 25,000 people, however you make them, to however you monetize, and you will get 80% from there. So those are two things. With regards to economics, we know we wanted to have better economics. And then with regards to developers, we also learned that we talked to a lot of people, you know, iOS developers, you know, and they were like, hey, we just want transparent terms. We want to make sure that we know your rules. We want to make sure if you're carving something out for your categories or anything like that, we want to make sure that we understand that we know where we are in the publishing process and everything else. So this slide right here is our value prop. From here down, I'm going to kind of dive down to the APIs, but I think there's some really great sessions out there. If you go to Channel 9, there's sessions for people that are talking about the business opportunity, talking about you know, our kind of like our value prop, and I feel that we're very, very competitive with any other platform out there, not just iOS, but any other platform out there. So,
absolutely.
So we have that. And with that, let me show you a little bit of the store and some of the discovery that we've done. And for that, I'm going to start right here with IE. So I'm in Internet Explorer right now, and you know, with regards to discovery, we've done a few things so that your app can be discovered even from the web, right, without going to the store. So for example, right here, I'm in Evernote, and I'm running the Internet Explorer browser. And you see here, I went to their website, and I see their application right there, and you see that, you know, their website right here, it's, you know, talks about their products, et cetera. Now, the interesting thing is if I'm right here, and I look, if you look at my app, my navigation bar right here, I have the address bar right here, and this one icon, if I was in another website, this one icon wouldn't have this plus sign right here. And what's going on here is, you, on your website, you can write a little meta tag that our browser will detect, and that meta tag can tell the browser that you have an application in the store. So for example, right here, I went to evernote.com, I can click right here, and you'll see right here that says, hey, switch to the Evernote Touch app because I already have it installed. If I didn't have it installed, it would actually say install our application. So you no longer have to take 50% of the real estate on your website telling people, we have an iOS, Android app, and everything else. Because nowadays, when I go to half the sites, that's what they do, right? They have this, hey, install it from here. So here, it's very, very efficient. It's just a little meta tag that everybody can put on their site and advertise. Another thing that we've done is we've actually have our store online. So for example, right here, I'm in Bing. And I just go in there and I search for that exact same app, Evernote Windows Store, right? And you see the results come up, and you see the very top result is the Evernote Touch app for Windows in the Windows Store. So the very first link from somebody that did a Bing search is actually a link on to install the app. And I come right here. This is our store on the web. So you see all the metadata. You see the screenshot. You see the description. You're seeing everything else, that everything that you can see, but you're still doing it online. And then I, from there, can say, oh, let me view this on the Windows Store. And this is going to launch the Windows Store app. And from here is where I would install it. And of course, right now, it's going to tell you that, hey, these applications are already installed. You see here also, Evernote has a desktop app and a, what they call their Touch app, which is their Windows Store app. And you see that you can have both of them listed. So if you have a desktop app, you know, from a previous a few years old, et cetera, you can actually just bring it on and still advertise it on the store. It's a great way for people to still get more money. With regards to the main store experience, this is kind of what we look like. We do a lot of, editorials right here. So this is 8.1, so we have the store. And then we have Pix for You, which is kind of a new something we're doing for 8.1, which is new. And Pix for You is kind of looking at applications I've installed before, trends. So it's kind of a Bing, engine, smart engine that's actually picking stuff for me. I mostly installed, a few demo apps for this. So my application's pretty empty. So I'm not sure how applicable these are.
It's a really good way to enhance discoverability of applications.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Right.
So
you're not limited to just
increase
the top
relevance.
Lists.
Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly. And then of course we have our editorial like popular now, and then we actually have new releases and everything else. And we have categories as you would. So the categories, this is 8.1, so I no longer know which categories we'll have. But the canonical categories that you think about with games, productivity, social, all those categories are there with regards to your app. The installation, or actually like just looking at the details of for any app, are very, very straightforward. So let's go here. For example, if I'm looking for anything that's popular now, I can go back and see, let's see what's popular now. For example, the YouTube app, I can come back here and see, I see the button for install. I see kind of a description. I see the features. I see all my screenshots. I see the ratings. I see some of the commentary that people have had. So everything that you would expect out of a store is there. Mm-hmm. So right here, I can discover anything I want about the app and decide whether I want to install it or not.
Yep. Pertaining to the store, we've actually got a question sitting in here
yep.
now. So it's basically asking, for Windows 8.1, like Xbox One and everything that's coming in the future, are those all going to be united under one store? Or are we still going to have different stores for phone and Windows?
So that's a great question. Today, we still have two stores.
Mm-hmm.
I think long-term, Microsoft has always said that our intent is to converge. But honestly, there's no short time frame on that. Today it's two stores. We have a Windows Phone. I guess we have three stores if you include Xbox. We have Windows Phone, we have Windows Store, and then we have kind of the Xbox Marketplace. And those are three. Today we still have three stores. We're looking to converge a little bit over time, but there's nothing to announce with regards to the time frame.
And the other second part of that was on the Windows Store. You can both get Windows Store style apps and also desktop apps.
Yep. On mm-hmm. the Windows Store, what happens on the Windows Store is you see desktop apps are listed, and then when it comes down to install the app, because they don't have the deployment package,
right.
the security, and all the extra
They're
work that we do.
They're still using their own installer.
Then what you do is you go in there, you look at their when you click on the desktop app. It says, oh, go to, for example, Adobe. If you're installing something from Adobe, go to their website and install it from there. So we list it and we make it very discoverable, but then you install it outside of
okay.
the application model for us. And we no longer, at that point, you're installing a regular desktop app.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're at. So this is our store. Obviously, from here, we have search. You can expect, we have good search discovering your apps and making sure that we can find all your applications very, very quickly. So that's kind of, that's my high level. Again, that's my pitch and my sales pitch on the store. From here down, let's talk about what developers need to do. So the first thing is developers will need to register. And we have two types of developer registration. Individual registration and business. So we actually, individual is $49, business is $99. So there's kind of an advantage towards if you want to be individual and do it at that level. It's a little bit cheaper. We do a little bit less validation. And for the most part, you can submit to the store. You will get the same treatment with regards to how quickly we'll certify your app and all this thing. There's just less validation. And there's just only a few features that actually where we do require that you be a business in order for you to have a feature.
The documents library.
So documents library is a good one. If you're doing enterprise, if you're using capabilities for enterprise authentication or something like that, we also require that you be a business. There's only a couple of these. The extra cost is because it costs more to validate.
If something's messing with the documents library, you want to make sure that's a very trustworthy application.
Yep, exactly. And we do for all, when an app gets submitted and they're touching the document library or looking at enterprise authentication center, they go through a very rigorous, look at the app, see what it's doing, making sure that it's not damaging anything. But that's just one of the differences. That's the only difference. It's not like one of them goes faster. It's not like one of them has unlimited support or anything like that. They both get the same treatment. But from a developer standpoint, it does come down to what you have to pay. We also have, which you don't see listed here, for example, for startup, we have programs called BizSpark, which, if you join that program, you get the registration for free and along with other benefits. For students, we have DreamSpark. So we've always been, startups and, students always pretty much get registration to phone and, Windows Store and everything else for free. So there's some advantages there. With regards to APIs, our APIs are quite different. Like, I go back to what we did with Push, where I said, we're similar to Apple, but in some cases, our APIs are a little bit or much simpler with regards to how you will test it from a developer standpoint. So for example, for me in Apple, if I want to do in-app purchase and I want to offer my stuff, I have to go in there, go into, iTunes Connect, and enter every single one of my product IDs. If I have staging and production environment, I have to enter them twice. There's a lot of work that I go through in order for me to test my app because I have three different test environments. And, if I ever want to reuse a string or change something, it's hard. On our world, if you're the developer and you want to just simulate the licensing and product options, we have these current app simulator, which is just a little mug of the store APIs. And then with that, you load an XML file. And in that XML file, the schema is documented, and there's plenty of samples that you can download. And with that schema, you can just go in there and say, look, I'm going to have in-app purchase for this. I'm going to, test a scenario where this is already activated, but this is not. So you can go in there and tweak it as much as you want and test every possible thing, every permutation that you would need for in-app purchase. This includes trial conversion. This includes in-app purchase in your app, buying a feature, any of those things, you can actually go in there and test. I mentioned this earlier with regards to our APIs. Time-based trials require no code at all. Obviously, if you're going to offer a time-based trial, I think what you should do is, go ahead and write a little bit of that work so that you can ask for conversion, so that you don't just wait for the software to expire, right? But if you wrote your app already and you just want to go back now and say, hey, I'm going to offer a time-based trial, you can go back onto the portal, the developer portal where you submit your app, and just select a free trial period. What we're seeing, if you want my recommendation, is 2 days is a really good free trial for a lot of apps, for a lot of games. That's kind of when people buy. They play it for a little bit, and then they'll buy within the first 2 days. I definitely, it's up to you if you wanted a 30 or other time frame, but that's kind of what we were looking at. With regards to the API, this is kind of what you would have to do if you wanted to compare a trial, just to see how straightforward it is. You can come back here and to compare a trial, you go, you register, you get the license information, you register for the license change event, and then we have a little API that says if license information is trial, request app purchase async. And it's, of course, an async, you're using a wait, and then you'll just go ahead and request the app purchase. And this is going to show the UI with all the metadata for your app, right? So for simulation, you're just going to get this little UI that has, a return, whether it succeeded or failed. You're not going to see all the metadata. But when you go into the real API, you'll see all the metadata for your app, your price, localized, your description, localized, everything that you would expect out of it. And it's just a few lines of code to kind of convert trials. So this is one where, again, if you have a trial, not writing the code to convert sooner, not prompting the user, feels like a lost opportunity.
And of course, that's just for the feature limited trials, right?
Yeah, for conversion, or you can, with time-based trials, you can still convert, right? So you can detect hey, am I in trial mode? Right? You can detect when it's being launched, and you can detect am I in trial mode, and then just prompt the user and say, hey, buy now.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be feature differentiated, but for feature differentiated, you definitely have to.
Yeah, use a similar check and also to turn things on and off.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So here's a little bit of the code that we will use for in-app purchase. So you can see here for in-app purchase, what we do is we just go in there, look at the current license information, then we check for a specific product license by, you know, this one I'm looking for product one, and then I check, oh, has this been, you know, is this product license active? And is this product active? And the reason we check for two things is because we don't want you doing a purchase on something when the user hasn't bought the app. So if you have enough purchase and your app actually has a price, so you're in a trial period, and somebody buys the English or the Spanish dictionary, it's kind of confusing that they haven't bought your app, but they bought the dictionary, and then this thing's going to expire. So you have to check for both. And then all you have to do is, again, you call request product purchase async, where you give us a product, and then we'll go ahead and detect it and do all the work for you. And then you're just detecting whenever your license changed, and you handle it where you enable the feature or you the right thing. With regards to, you know, like in-app purchase, Windows 8.0 does not have consumables. They have durables. If you know the difference, consumables versus durables is, consumable is like, for example, I'm playing Candy Crush and I just want the power boost to do something right there. And that's I'm going to buy it now. I'm going to use it immediately and it's going to go away. A durable for us would be something where, for example, I want to buy this boost for a week. Like I'm using some video editing software, and I want to buy this kind of power boost where I can do the pro version of the editor for a week, because I'm in a major project or anything like that. So durables kind of have a time span. Consumables are like, hey, buy it, and then whatever you do in the back end, you do in the back end, and it's a one-time thing for us. And when Windows 8.0, we did not include consumables. This was a kind of a painful late cut that we just couldn't squeeze it in. But this is already an 8.1. And if you're coding for Windows 8 right now, the answer to consumables is pretty simple. Take durables, which normally have a time span, and then just pick the shortest time span, like the time span, for example, a day. And now sell that feature, and you can create 5 or 6 of these if the users are going to be buying several of these within a one-day period. And then just sell them that much, and then they'll expire in the next day, so you'll be able to sell them again. Mm-hmm. I'm a Candy Crush, my kids were Candy Crush addicts, and usually they bought it once or twice a day for a few days until they got through a lot of the levels. So I think if you just do that with durables, that's something that can hold you over until you get to 8.1, where we have full consumables. And consumables is more interesting because it requires that you validate that you have fulfilled that consumable,
right?
So, for example, the way it's a little bit of a kind of a two-part when it comes to purchasing, and you see the API right here. I'm just going to go in and say, hey, request product purchase async. And then I get a status that said, yeah, that succeeded, or it hasn't been fulfilled yet, meaning that was open already, or maybe the user canceled, and then we just return you a not purchased, right? And you see kind of the first part, which is, hey, here's where you buy it. And then if that goes well, then when you buy it, what you have to do is fulfill it, right? So if you're, again, if it's a power boost in your app, it's a one-time thing, or if it's something that you're selling them and it's going to stay for a while, you just got to update your server-side code and do whatever it is to fulfill it, and then you call onto us and say, hey, we're reporting this consumable has been filled. Right, and that way we don't, because otherwise you end up buying the same thing twice. And I always do the same thing. I tend to do it where I code something and I'm debugging, and then I stop the debugger in the middle, and then when I go back, I always say, no, you have unfulfilled purchases here. Mm. So it does the same thing. It's a very similar flow to what you would get out of iOS. We're probably a little bit nicer on the async await, but the APIs are very, very, very similar.
And you also do get the simulator.
Yeah, we have the simulator for you to configure it as you go, and for you to tweak every permutation, which is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And we also have receipts, so very similar with receipts. Again, receipts uses the same functionality that something similar functionality to what you get out of iOS. When you made your purchase, you can actually get a receipt and then send that receipt to your server side and validate the receipt or do whatever you want. So from here, with the simulator, we actually have support for receipts. So you can load a receipt and actually test it and send it to your server and get everything else that you would want. So we have a Get App Receipt Async. This is the API that you should be looking if you want to do receipts. And then from there, you can do a Get Product Receipt ID, which gives you that product ID, and then you validate it and you go from there. So very, very straightforward. These APIs are not that different from what you see in other platforms. I just want to do a shout here to one of the SDK samples that has pretty much everything that you will need with regards to store. So here, this is the store sample as we have it. This is the 8.1 sample, and it has every possible thing. So you can go back here and say, hey, I'm using trial mode, and it gives you a trial period with expiration there. It gives you a trial mode, it gives you the purchase. You can buy the app here, so this is conversion. And you can see our UI. This is the one thing where we don't show you the real UI. Right. We give you kind of a trial mode. And here you can just return SOK. SOK is the standard succeeded. S is for S, so like succeeded. And underscore OK, this is the old days of calm. If you're old enough like me, you will have nightmares about these H results, right? SOK is the one that you want. You can return back invalid arguments or fail or out of memory if you're going to test for different conditions. But pretty much SOK success, and the other ones are failure, and they all come back as an exception anyway on that side. So you won't be able to do a lot with the differences.
And that's the current app simulator that's bringing up that dialogue for
yep.
you.
Yeah, so that's the simulator. On the real production, you will get a nice system dialogue with your metadata and everything else. And then this, again, this demo has in-app purchase. It has expiring products, consumables now for 8.1. Kind of has an advanced consumable where you can see, like, for example, enumerate the unfulfilled consumables. Again, used for debugging where you can go in there and clear all your unfulfilled stuff. But you can also do that. You should write code that does that for real right. users where you're going back and doing the right thing. Because there is, with consumables, there is that time where, it's not an ACID transaction. You have to go back and do kind of a two-phase commit type transaction, right? You can see large catalogs. You can see app listing where I can show my URI for my app listing. And then you can validate receipts or get a receipt for my application. So every possible thing that you need with regards to the store APIs is in this sample. I'm not going to walk you through all of them because that's just redundant. But every single one will be available for you there. Still related to the store, I want to kind of do a call out to a few things that are interesting with regards to building your app. We have this services.windowsstore.com website. That is great for developers, so you can go find about services. The reason I enumerated this one is because if you go to this website, you'll see here, for example, we have advertisement, right? So we have third-party advertisement like InMovi or Leadbolt or, you know, Microsoft Advertisement SDK. So as they pop up, like, you know, as AdMove comes in or any of those, they'll be listed here. And you can go in there and see different options, right? So, I'm looking for advertisement. Or you can also see, for example, earlier, Sean talked about push notifications, and we have Push.io, Parse, you know, all the, you know, popular push vendors are supporting our platform. So you can come back here and see if they have an offer, see what they have, and kind of discover good partners that you can use for your application. Moving towards submission, here's kind of how I think of submission, and I kind of walk through it. I think it's kind of, of course, you have to have done all your development for your app and everything, and then after that, there's kind of what I see are 5-step process, and I have screenshots of all of them so users can kind of become familiar. So register to a store. It's a portal. You pay your $99, and you will need the Microsoft account that you've been using to develop. So there's nothing too excited there. It's not that different from what you get out of iTunes Connect or any other store out there. And then we have this WAC tool. We call it the WAC, and it's Windows Application Certification Kit. But the results always feel like they WAC you, so it kind of it fits.
And this tool is very useful.
Yeah, this tool is very useful. So what this...
It's basically what gets run when you submit for certification, right? Plus a little bit more testing.
It's one of the things that gets run. So Our WAC for us is it does as much static analysis as we can around against the tool. And what this does is, it, for example, like with Windows Store APIs, you have to go back and use the right subset of core CLR if you're coding on .NET or if you're coding onto C++, you need to make sure you're using valid APIs.
Right.
And this tool validates all of that. And then this tool validates simple stuff like, for example, I fail because I'm doing debug, or I fail because when you talk about app model, if your suspend is taking longer than 5 seconds and you crash, you will fail certification. And
right.
This tool tells for all of that. In this case, for example, I failed because I didn't have all the store logo. The application template gives you these default store logos, and we actually can test whether you have an overwritten.
Right.
And we don't want the big X to show up on the store.
It's a big X because you should replace it.
Right. So you need to replace them. So in this case, that's why I failed.
Okay.
It's funny. I passed the bytecode generation, the performance, all that, but I failed because I didn't have the images. So again, the very first thing that's going to happen when you submit your application to the store, as soon as we get through on the queue, right? Because we do have a queue, we do fall behind sometimes. Is we're going to run this. So if you submit your application to store and you haven't run this yourself, you're just doing yourself a disservice. You're going to wait for us a day or 8 hours or whatever, and then all you're going to do is get these results back if you haven't even run this. So on that side, you should run the WAC tool before you submit and be aware of, make sure you pass, so that will make your life much, much easier. With regards to our certification requirements, we're very, very transparent. We have the requirements listed on the website, so you can go back and check the URL from here. And then the one thing that we do, which is nice, is that we give you kind of our criteria or our guidance around common certification errors. For example, if you go read the certification requirements, which I think Apple calls their guidelines, we call them requirements because they are required. You'll see things like, for example, we'll say something like, if you're using personalized information, you need a privacy policy. And in some countries, for example, IP address is personalized information. So if you don't have a privacy policy and you're using networking, you'll fail because of that. And those are things that not everybody who reads the requirements, like you don't immediately jump onto that conclusion when you read them.
Right.
So what we've done is we keep accumulating our lessons learned, and we have them right here at this aka.ms/storefix. We list them and we tell people, hey, make sure you've read through all of them so you have a really great understanding. Our store, on average for the last, we launched last October, and we had periods where we were very, very hot, like getting huge, huge numbers of apps ready around launch, et cetera. So we were delayed a little bit. But our store, on average, I think that we just published a number, and it's 2.2-day or 2.5-day is how long it takes to certify. That's average.
And that's not very long at all.
So that's not long compared to Apple. And considering that we do all the certification and all the stuff, it's not like Android where you just go in there and publish and you're on your own here. For the thorough job that we do, this isn't so bad. And this is the average, so you might be one of those that gets stuck in the 5-day, or you might be one of those lucky ones that gets through within 8 hours.
Right.
So you vary, but if you've done all these things, if you pass WAC, if you've read all this stuff, then you increase your odds of getting through much quicker, so it's going to improve your app. With regards to signing your app, I kind of drew the kind of how it works. From within Visual Studio, once you have your Microsoft account, from within Visual Studio, you will be able to... just tell the Visual Studio, hey, please associate my app with my Microsoft account. And this is where the sign-in happens. So if you're familiar with iOS, we have provisioning profiles, certificates, all kinds of fairly complicated things that are associated with bundle IDs, et cetera. So it's a little bit tough to configure.
Mm-hmm.
On Windows, we don't have any of that. You go into Visual Studio, you click associate once, we download the certificate from there, and then from there you can submit and do everything else that you need. When you submit, we update some metadata within your app, within your project file. Let's see the notes. So mention the poll is on the website. So we're about to finish. We're probably within 10 to 15 minutes away from finishing. So please go in and fill in the poll. It's really useful information. Tell us what you like, what you didn't like. Give them the feedback, because these are very valuable events that need the feedback, need to see what the interactions, how to improve.
Right. It helps let us know what to do better next time.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So so this is how you sign your app. Again, it's very, very straightforward. You know, for me, when if I just move machines, moving my provisioning profiles, keeping track of the certificates, et cetera, it's a significant amount of work. Here, we keep it very, very straightforward for developers to do that. Once you've submitted your app, so that would, you know, I didn't go through the submission process because you go to our website and that's the same than everything else. You go in there, configure your markets and everything else. Once you submit your app, we give you very, very detailed reporting. So we give you kind of what we call the developer analytics, and you'll see very different types of reports. For example, your adoptions, your ratings. You'll see information on who's installing your app, where are they installing from. So you see all this information, details on your in-app purchase. And you see, for example, we have a report on store trends. So you can see, hey, people are starting from, you know, installing from here. Here's what's going on. So you kind of see, hey, how am I doing compared to everybody else? You see your, obviously, developer financial summary. Again, hit 25K, and you move up to the 80%. So that's the one place that you got to keep an eye on all the time. Because
right.
That's when the money starts adding up. And just for, you know, I gave a couple samples here of the reports. These are not all the reports. I couldn't do screenshots of all of them. But just to give you an idea, here's examples of
and
conversions.
That's really useful information for tracking the success of an ad campaign you maybe had going
exactly.
to promote your app, all sorts of that kind of stuff. Very useful statistics, especially compared to a lot of the other stores that have.
Yep. Yeah. So we, you know, we will continue to improve in our reporting. I don't think we are. I think we're proud of where we're at. I think we know we have to, or we know we want to do more. But compared to everybody else, this is a very nice thing to have. Because you know, if you're an indie developer like me, I don't go in there and track. I don't necessarily have a lot of this. So this to me was very valuable information where I didn't have to do a lot of analytics and I got a lot of payback.
Is there anything like integrated crash reports coming anytime soon?
Yep. So so we do have that already, and that's in the developer portal. I think right here when there's an option here that says quality. So when you submit your application to the store, we actually we keep your crash dumps there, so you can download them. They're mini crash dumps, but you can go in there and see your mini crash dumps, see if there's trends. And if you're one of the really big offenders, we actually have teams at Microsoft that analyze all that data and run automated tools, and we see the same crashes. So if we see the same crashes over and over, then we actually ping the developers. So I've had partners that I know who are like, you know, like these are among the top 100 applications. Like we add up all the crashers, we look at the analytics, we, you know, we go back and say, oh, these are the top 100 apps crashing. And then we reach out when we know who manages or when we know the people there, we reach out and say, hey, you know, you're kind of constantly doing this. Can you look into it and see if you can fix it? Because we want the better quality out of it. Any independent developer, you don't have to wait to be in the top 50. You can just, you know, fix your crashes early. So the dumps are there available on the store. And then we have instructions on how to use them, how to analyze them. So we also give you, you know, like here you're seeing your reviews. And you can go in there and see, you need one, you can go in and see reviews for all markets in one place, which is very useful to have.
The crash dump and everything's reporting because we're totally reliant on iOS on third-party systems for that.
Yep.
To have something built in without having to include another library or something in your applications, a big plus.
Yep. No, we have that out of the box. And we spend a lot of time. Our own apps spend a lot of time in that space, too. So we learn. That's how we learn how people we have. Windows is very, very data-driven, right? For example, if you look at, we talked earlier about us redesigning search. We have so many metrics from tens of, you know, from millions and millions of people on how they're using search. And we were looking at it and saying, look, we're noticing that they search here, and then they search again, and they search again. So that's when we said, oh, we need this hero that can give them a preview of everything else, because otherwise they're going to just, they're kind of guessing. They're blind guessing, you know. Might as well be like, you know, pick one in the dark, you know, like I'm feeling lucky equivalent. Because we were seeing that functionality. So we're very data-driven. We have a lot of the crash data and everything else. And that's it with regards to the store. Again, for me, go back, look at the one slide. I think we have a really great value prop. For iOS developers that are considering the store, we're still, you know, we have 100,000 apps. We're eight months into it. We've definitely, I think we've crossed the 100,000 apps. So, But not all those apps are great. There's still room for all of these really great iOS apps to actually move and make money as we're ramping up our users. So we're a new platform. Our users are ramping up. There's obviously, again, too many Windows users out there, but not everybody's moved to 8 and 8.1. So our users are ramping up. Right now is the time where you can come in and be ready. 8.1, by the way, will be a free update. So if you're a developer and you're wondering, oh, what do I do? I would tell you code for 8 because that's the one that's available now, so you shouldn't wait. If your app will take a lot longer, like 3 to 4 months, you can even start with 8.1. What we would expect is that it'll be a free update, so users could move a little bit faster.
The adoption rate should be quite high. You know?
Yep, the adoption rate should be good. And then you can have an 8.0 and an 8.1 app in parallel on the store, so you can always start with 8.0. Move it to 8.1 so you can take advantage of a few of the new features. For example, consumables, that's going to be
an 8.1
feature.
And still leave your 8 version up for people who haven't upgraded yet.
Exactly, and you can have the two versions side by side and everything else. So again, really great value prop. As you saw from there, we make it very easy with regards to the APIs, the samples, and you know the simulator to actually test all of our store APIs. So that's it. With this, we thank you very much. Thanks to Sean and Eric for being here with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Jaime, for having
us. And thanks for the studio guys for all the work for the,
yeah,
for the whole
big
day.
Thanks to MVA, so, Microsoft Virtual Academy.
Yep. And hopefully students will get something out of it. We will make sure to post all the samples and all the PowerPoints somewhere and then put a note in MVA so where people can go download the samples and the PowerPoints. So we'll make sure that those are all available.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching.